are listening to Read Divine. My name is Promise Kramer, and thank you so much for tuning in. In today's episode, we are talking about family structures or the destructions of family structures. So we are looking into the destructions of family structures in South Africa, in the apartheid era or in the oppression era, which was in 1948 until 1994. And I would still say it is still kind of affecting, even though it's been 29 years since the apartheid ended. So the oppression, the apartheid era, the oppression of black people affected how black people were in their family structure. And not just black people, I mean non-white people. We see Khoisans, colored people, black people, and etc. that were affected in terms of how their family structure were functioning after the apartheid, or even during the apartheid. So the episode, the main reason of the episode, is to look into how do we rebuild, how do we try and redefine family systems or family structure today, to try and build more functional families for the future. So during oppression, the main reason that it was extremely dysfunctional for the family unit, I mean, it was oppression, it is very dysfunctional in general for individuals, but men and women were kind of, they were in war with each other. Because the apartheid era, the oppression really affected everyone, but I would say mostly it did affect men the most, because men were, they had to go to work in extreme conditions. They worked in mines, and they got introduced to alcohol and stuff. Most other cultures, like the Khoi cultures and stuff, with work, they would work and get paid with alcohol, which was like legal for the miners, or for the, not mostly in mines but in fields and stuff. They would pay them with wine, which in its own was direct contribution of destructions in the family, because that introduced alcoholism and drug abuse to men and women. That was then affecting. Family structure, or how those parents function within the family, how they were to their children, how they were with each other. Alcohol, we all know that is a direct result of violence, physical violence. When we're under the influence, we are not mostly in our senses, especially when we overdo it, when we are alcoholics. So when you look into families during that era, oh, by the way, there is some farms today that are still paying with alcohol in South Africa. Ridiculous. So when you look into families, then the cases of violence that were dished by men to women was rocketing high. And it had a lot to do with how oppressed we were, especially men were. Men were feeling the heat of oppression, of working extremely hard without being paid for their work, really. And they couldn't free themselves because of prison and etc. Like, my father, they would come and fetch him in the middle of the night, and my stepmother would have to kind of hide him and stuff, and just that on its own, that we were not sure how things would go, what would happen. We were living under fear. That creates something in the system, that creates something in an individual, and creates this edge of not being easy and not being warm for the children, and not being loving and attentive and present to the children, because you're already in such fear of something that can happen. You feel like your life is not in control. I think also apartheid kind of stripped not just freedom, but freedom of choice, or of choosing out of one's choice. And that plays a big role in terms of how we are then as parents to our children. There's a lot more that apartheid did to disrupt the family structure that I don't really want to get into as much in this episode, because I want to focus on ways we can move forward today in 2023, which is already so many years later after apartheid. And the reason that I even thought of this episode is because it's been years that I've been thinking about this. I talk about this with people around me, how when you look around, when I'm in Soweto, which is where I'm from, at home, and or in KZN, I see how it's being affected. I see how dysfunctional families are. I see how alcohol has taken over families. I see how young men, they're in the streets, and it's mostly young men that are in the street taking drugs and really not being able to be fathers even when they have children, and their fathers couldn't do the same, so they really don't have much example. And I see how much this still needs to be done in terms of healing, and in terms of focusing into healing a family structure, because I understand that everything comes from the family structure, from the system of the family. We are all products of a system, right? We all have mothers, fathers, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, and great-great-grandmothers, etc. So we come from this force of system, right? And in the system, if something is hindered, if the love is not flowing freely, it just affects us, and we have to work extra hard into making sure that we don't take it back, take it into the next generation. I can't speak. So we have to work extra hard that we kind of stop, or we kind of look back and try and leave a different strain, or do things differently for the people that will come after us, and mostly for ourselves, right? So I can say truly that I come from a family system that wasn't so functional, and I can now see, or I've been seeing over the past few years, I've been tracing that has to do with the oppression. It wasn't just the dysfunction of my own family, just my own system, but it was more the society of my country, the dysfunction of the whole society, and you know, the grief that was experienced, or that was never really experienced from the whole system, that the whole system was grieving because it was in so much depressed, it was carrying so much anger and hatred that was dished out to it. So when I look into a lot of families around, there is no order, which will take me to the point of how do we then rebuild? How do we rebuild from the oppression? How do we try and create structures, family structures for ourselves that will be more functional for ourselves and for the children, that will be more healthy to bring about better generation to come? And it's gonna take a lot, that's for sure, because still 20 years later, and we still haven't done much. Beside, maybe I could say that I am now a middle class black woman, I guess. I have a home, and you know, I can live in a white area if I want to, like I have a car, etc. So in like financial wise, I would say that I'm not oppressed anymore. And I cannot say that for every other black people in this country, but I can speak that for myself, that and most other of my friends, we are middle class black people. We, you know, we're working and we living much better than three generations before us, right? So that is fine. However, we are just as dysfunctional as the system as our previous generations were, in terms of most of us, we're not married, we don't look after our own kids, they're raised by someone else, or we angry with, you know, the notion of angry black woman. We are still living under this oppression, really. It is still carrying through, even though it is not technically on paper still apartheid. Right? So how do we rebuild? How do we then move forward? How do we read divine family systems? How do we read divine family structures for us to build better generations? And I think the number one thing I'm going to talk about is to reconnect with divine love, with divine God. One of the big things I think happened during the apartheid was the destruction of cultures, that we turned away from what, like, from our own cultures or from their own doings, and whether that was good or not, but that force of dysfunctional, of turning away without really realizing that that's not out of choice, most people turned away completely from godlike love or something bigger, because they thought, if there's something bigger, why would we be going through this? So it's either people turned away completely from believing in something higher than us, or they believed in something else, like they replaced God maybe with, I don't know, something else. And I know for myself, on the previous episode I talked about obedience, that I couldn't give space for anything greater than myself, because I could only trust me. Me was the only thing that was real. Me was the only thing that I could really rely on, and nothing else. And I think once we reconnect to divine love, to divine God, we are able to start a connection with trust. We're able to trust something that is outside of ourselves, right? So connecting to God also helps us to have a comforter, to have something where we can turn to when we feel oppressed, when we feel heavy, when we feel depressed, when we feel we cannot handle anymore. We have something we can turn to, that we can pray to, that we can seek guidance to. The next point I want to talk about is order. Definitely order was destructed during the oppression. So, you know, families were broken up. You know, fathers couldn't be at home with their children. They couldn't raise their children. I know my father was on the run from most of my brother's childhood. He was in exile, and it was always destruction, and there was no order. So the women had to step in for all the roles, and they were angry, really. They were angry on the system. They were even angry with the men. Men, when they were around, they got paid with alcohol, and they were always drunk, and they were always being abusive. And children were just, there was no order. Children were not considered. They were not considered that they have to be created a warm environment for them to be able to thrive. So order was completely destructed. And it wasn't just men that were abusing alcohol and drugs. Women as well, meaning they couldn't mother their children. They couldn't cook meals at times. Children as young as 7 years old had to provide for themselves, cook for themselves, go out, find food for themselves. I know that I had to start cooking as early as 8 or 9 years old. But that was because my mom had to work, was a single mom, had to work, and yeah, I had to be the mother already at 9 years old to my little sister. And that is not order. That is dysfunctional. And that played a huge role in me, to harden me up and to raise me way too early. So bringing order, that parents are parents and children are children, you know. There's this thing especially that I notice in African societies, in black, in South African societies, that children are mostly in the roles of the parents, and the parents are in the roles of the children. So it's not orderly, and not just taking care of them, which I think there's nothing wrong if we are of age and we're able to take care of our parents that we do that. But because we had to do it before we were even of age, so we think in, like, unconsciously we think we are the parents. In some subconscious level, there's that thing that we don't have order as to who is the parent and who's the child. You know, our roles are mixed up. We really don't know how, who is who, where is who. There's no order. And how can we even give respect if we feel like we are the parents? If we feel like they're incapable of being parents, we can never give them respect if we don't see them as being parents or as deserving of that role, or that deserving of being parents, or because we've been parents. So I have been trying every time to bow to my parents. As soon as it happened a few years ago, as soon as I noticed that I've been in the mother role for my parents for since I was about 10, and I had to reprogram myself to step back and take the child role, that even when I can provide for them financially, I am still their child and they are my parent, and that will forever be. Forever be. Even if I would be 90, I would still be a child to my parent. So how I did that was to take a bow to them without them being around, of course, but just to acknowledge the fact that they are my parents and I am their child. You know, they're big and I'm small. And to let that settle within me, and to kind of stay away a little bit I would not say the drama, but from what happened, like the other facts, because of course it will be difficult if our parents can be very abusive at times, and they can cause us to not want to acknowledge them as our parent. But slowly acknowledging within ourselves that we are the children and they are big and we are small helps in terms of bringing order within ourselves. You're not even doing it for them, we're doing it for us. And also relieved me a lot from the responsibilities that I was carrying, that I shouldn't have been carrying, that I've been carrying for a long time. Order, we also see it in terms of in a relationship, in a partnership, right? Who does what? It's like in this modern age, we want to get rid of all the religious rules of a union, that's fine, but we get, whether it's cultural or religious, we want to get rid of that and we want to be modern. However, that still needs to have order. Everything has to have order. When we look around us, around nature is the most orderly thing. It's the ordered chaos. It's chaotic but with order. You know, the seasons, things grow in an orderly way. You know, apple seed will always be an apple seed, whether the apple tree will grow smaller or bigger or in its own way, but it will always be that, an apple seed, and it will always produce apples. So there is always order within us, within around us, but somehow we fight against order. So we don't discuss like order, who does what, and how do we provide what for each other or for the kids, etc. And really, I know that, you know, religious would try and tell you, no, women should only be doing this or men should only be doing this, and it's not about that. I don't think it's about that, because there was time in my relationship with my partner where you know, he did all the household because I was working and studying, and I worked extreme hours, and he was working more child, and you know, he could do the household. Yes, we had help in terms of cleaner, and you know, would organize everything, cooked every night, etc. But there was order. It was organized that he's gonna do this for now and I did other things, and because that was communicated and we had that order, it worked. And when I was then at home and I was having my children, I then took over more things because he had to work more. And then there was order in that sense. And that then makes us to live in harmony, because we are establishing order. So that's the most basic order I can think about, but order in so many different ways. And we always kind of are submitted to order anyway in society, for the society to function. You know, you have to follow the rules of traffic, for example, and follow order and stuff. So order needs to be established within a family system for the system to be able to function, not just function, for the system to be able to thrive, actually. And that will bring me to also, as like now for women, to go through the passage of womanhood, meaning to acknowledge and embrace all the traits of being a woman, being warm, being loving, being yielding, being understanding, being kind, and providing an environment that will help children and our partners and our parents to thrive around us and within us, and us to thrive. And that will also link to what the first said, making time for our maker, because once we establish connection with the orders of love, or connecting to the divine love, we are able to see the divinity within us. Because yes, oppression, whether it's oppression from men or from the government or from whatever thing else that would oppress, it kind of makes us to not want to not see value in what we are and what we bring. It makes us want to be anything else but what we are. You know, like, I wanted to be anything else but what I was. I was always a bit gentler and softer growing up, and warm, and all those woman traits, really. I was that cliche woman, but I hated that because I was called a pushover. I was looked down at, and I wanted to be more like my brother, be more like my aggressive sister, or be more like my partner or whatever boyfriend I had, and just to be cool, be louder, be, and think that everything that I am is not good enough. It's awful, and should be, I should hide it, and I should mask this mask of being stronger, or being, yeah, whatever ideas I had. And I had to really understand, but, and it's a process, it's a journey, and I call it the passage of womanhood, because I feel like I'm still in the middle of that. I'm still in that passage of really truly accepting the essence of me, accepting the value that I bring, because that value is much needed in a family system. For the system to thrive, it needs warmth, it needs caring, it needs tender, it needs love. Yes, it needs the other things like strength, firmness, all the other beautiful things that I also have within me, but I am more able and comfortable to embrace those things than I am comfortable to embrace things that appear softer and gentler. But children, for example, need both to be able to thrive, to be able to be functional, happy adults in future. And I know that I only received the hardened parts, and from the woman in my side, or the men in my side. And I think that what kind of hardened me so much, and it would have saved me so much work and therapy and all those things that I had to go through, if I would have received that warmth and love from my parents, from both my father and my mother. The last thing I want to talk about is grief. I think in general, oppression was awful. It was really, really awful, and there needs to be a lot of grief and healing, and we need to have a lot of compassion to our parents, our great-grandparents, our grandparents, because they were who they were caused by circumstances. You know, I talked earlier about the flow of love. In a system, if love can't flow, it means it was hindered somewhere and it cannot flow through, and they couldn't let the love flow because they couldn't get it. And we cannot blame them for that. Yes, we can ask them, why didn't you try and work hard and change and be different and, you know, take it, you know, just heal. But circumstances were not allowing that to happen. I mean, it's been 29 years now after apartheid, and I'm only realizing now, or waking up now in a couple of years, and only realizing that, oh, I'm going through a completely different route, like the route that my parents and my grandparents took, and I need to take a step back. And I can only do that because the modern world is allowing me, and because of what they had to do, because they had to endure all the other things and provide for me to be able to have this kind of conversation, to be able to have to analyze and to choose different. So grief is very important, and when we have compassion to our elders and to the people that have endured first-handed the oppression, we are able to be easy with whatever they've wronged us with, because some of them are really, really awful, and I know that they are. We're talking abuse in the most awful way, physical abuse, verbal abuse, sexual abuse. It's all so traumatic. There's so much trauma that was dished out to children, to women, to men, because of the direct consequence of oppression, of apartheid. But once we come from a stand of compassion and understanding, even to the oppressor, I would push you to even that far, to even have compassion and forgiveness and understanding to the oppressor itself. Because I always say that the aggression came from the oppressor and the one that received the oppression. Everyone has kind of like was going for you to even want to oppress people in that sense means that you are yourself in so much fear and in so much disturbance. Now, I'm not saying that people should be let off the hook so easily, but I think people will always be held accountable and responsible. Life has a way of dealing that, of handling that, that is for sure. And if there's anything I've learned through therapy, whether working with people or going through my own therapy healing, is that we consequences always come to haunt us within ourselves. We might not tell people that, oh my god, I feel awful, or oh my god, I am haunted by this, but we always seem to be haunted by our actions that are not good to other people. But to free ourselves is to always to take the step of understanding and having compassion and forgiving. And I guess that's what I also love being a woman for, because I am more understanding, and as now that I'm going through accepting myself as a woman, I've developed a form of compassion and understanding and love, really, for people. And even people that have done me wrong, and people have done me really wrong. I've experienced so much abuse, verbally, physically, sexually. I have experienced it, but I have also experienced love, really, from people as well. So I do acknowledge and know that there is good and bad in each and every person. And my role is to have that compassion for me to be able to free myself. And by doing that, I have been freeing myself slowly but surely. And now the invitation is for you to look into rebuilding your family structure from whatever oppression that have been put into that structure. It might not be apartheid, you might not even be from South Africa, but the oppression is always there. Before apartheid, we are under kingdoms, but there were always some form of oppression for sure. Thank you so much for sticking through this episode. Today's episode was a bit different from what I usually post about, but it was dear to me and in my heart for a while now, and I wanted to discuss more about how do we create more functional families for us to be more functional people. Have a good day.